Hey, we made it to Thursday. I'm Cassandra Cousineau, your girl, the Sportsnista, and this is Levels. Usually at this time, you would see me with either one of my two partners in time, Ralph Velez and or Jeremy Long, and both of them just has stuff to do. Jeremy's on daddy duty today. His daughter is having a back-to-school event, and I believe Ralph is like on the road, although he just sent a message. So I don't know what you're doing out there, man. Pay attention to the road. But today we have a fantastic show, one of our favorite guests. And I know we ain't supposed to have favorites, but we do. WBO junior lightweight titleist Jamel Herring is here, and he got some stuff to say. So without further ado, let's bring him out. Bring him out.
Hey.
You know, I was thinking about it. I'm like, that would probably be my walkout song.
I mean, that's a nice ring to that, everything going on, especially with this show.
Like, absolutely. So listen, let's get to it because you have been really busy. There's a rumor. I'm sure the paperwork is still kind of being finalized, but the rumor on the streets is that you were going to fight Shakur Stevenson. Is that absolutely confirmed?
Yes. It's more likely of a 90% chance. I say the other 10% is when the paperwork just gets signed, but that's the move right now. That's definitely the move right now.
Now, what I saw was that the WBO ordered a purse bid, and it wasn't just an ordinary purse bid. It was a purse bid where it was 63% to Shakur and 27% to you, 37% to you, rather. How did you hear about that, and who on your team cussed them out when you found out?
You know, it's crazy. I was actually, over a few days ago, I was doing the whole commentating for Trilla on Fight TV, and I was literally in a fighters meeting. I was in a fighters meeting when my good buddy Jake Donovan, he had texted me saying that the WBO ordered the purse bid. But it was unusual. It was the other way around in terms of the numbers. And I was like, what? And then he sent me the letterhead of it, and I'm reading it. At the same time, I'm behind the table now, so I'm trying to be professional. I'm doing a fighters meeting. But I'm like, man, what is going on? So like, I thought it was a typo, and then I just started seeing that, you know, everyone started chiming in on it, and I was like, okay, I gotta say something real quick in between the breaks. And that's when I put out that tweet. But I've never seen that in the history of purse bids. It was more like a curse bid. but for the most part, we got it situated. But still, it just goes to tell you how crazy this sports, well, this boxing world can be at times, especially on the business side.
I always say, if it ain't messy, it ain't boxing.
Right.
So have you talked with anyone at the WBO or anyone on your team, and how did they explain that?
In terms of anyone on my team, my partner, JC, Jerry, he basically spoke with Top Rank directly, and they kind of cleared it up, saying that they had contracts already in place. And that's what I meant. Like, I could have sworn this thing was already done 2-3 weeks ago. So like, we had contracts, at least in my end, I had basically agreed to everything that was offered to me. But I guess since the other side didn't technically agree to things yet, that's when the WBO moved in. But like I said, which I didn't mind the WBO doing their job, but it's just the way how that looked. And it was just bizarre and crazy. But like I said, for the most part, it was nothing against Top Rank. I know everybody was kind of like bashing them, but Top Rank already had their work in place. They already had the paperwork in place. But we just had to basically, everyone had to basically come to the middle, though, and agree at that final hour.
It's been a crazy year for purse bids. COVID threw a wrench into things. And so you had players like Triller come in and provide something different. You were just actually on the Triller Fight Club right. card at Madison Square Garden. What would you tell people who are hating on what Triller's doing?
I said, give it a chance. I would just say, give it a chance. You know, I'm really... Because I look at it like this. At one point in time, you know, I come from an era where if you wanted boxing, it just came from HBO Boxing or Showtime. And HBO was actually the dominant, you know, player in boxing. And then when you had ESPN at one point, that was mainly for Friday night fights. So, and that wasn't, that actually wasn't that long ago. So,
no, it wasn't.
So it's crazy. So I would tell people, you know, the platform of way, the way boxing is being delivered is changing. And I know some were kind of skeptical about the Triller event because they thought it was going to be one of those events where there's music going on in between the fights and everything, but like, I'm glad that they let the card go first and then put the music and the concert and everything afterwards. But I mean, like I say, as long as it doesn't interfere and make it to like a circus, as I would say, and get messy, I'm fine with it. But you know, there's nothing wrong with them putting on events. Well, I say basically entertainment, because you know. They started with the boxing, then they moved to the music. I'm fine with that, but you just gotta just let things, you know, grow and develop and just see where it goes from there. I mean, nothing's ever gonna be perfect, but as long as they, you know, trying to take the sport of boxing seriously, which we all love, then I'm fine with that. But once you start making it into too much of a mockery, then I can understand why people will have an issue with this, that, or this or that.
What happened to Dipset?
I'm upset. I mean, I loved a lot because I
wasn't expecting that.
I grew up in New York, so you know, I'm very familiar with both of their catalogs. But I just thought, because you know, the Diplomats had so much, you know, in their resume in terms of just the individuals alone in the group, you would think that they will come at least. They're five top hits, and then come with another five of the group's best hits. But like, the Locks just they just had it more a better strategic plan, and man, it wasn't, like I said, I love Cam and them, but it wasn't close. It wasn't close in the end.
It was almost like the Locks had been watching Versus, and they knew how it was going down.
I mean, they had Jada. He's familiar with the Versus system, so. I mean, that basically played a lead hand into everything, how it played out. But I mean, it was a great night. It was a great night. I mean, just for the genre overall, it was a great night for hip hop music.
You see a fighter like Michael Hunter, who's kind of like floating right now, still a top 10 heavyweight, fairly young, comes from a fighting family. How do you think a platform like this benefits someone like Michael Hunter?
If anything, like if they promote it right, especially with the whole, when they was leading in with the music afterwards and everything there, I think it puts more eyes on him at least. You know what I mean? It gives him more attention than he would have in maybe his last two fights, I would say. So, and then you know, because at one point I think he was fighting like overseas, and when he fought Povetkin and things and guys like that or of that nature. So I think like a platform like that may help him, especially if he can't get on, you know, the Fox PBC side, the top ranked ESPN side, maybe even the Zone and so on. So. That's what I mean. I think the more eyes, the better, especially for his career, because he's one of those guys where he can be basically considered as high risk, low reward. But if he continues building his name and his resume, it's going to come to a point where the business side, of course, has to do their part. But if the fans out there pushing for certain fights to happen, that also plays a huge role, especially now that we live in the social media era. I mean, you and I both see it. Sometimes fights and announcements are basically made on social media. Like, that's how, even with my own situation with the purse bid, I found that out through social media. So, especially with the era we live in, it's like, you know, boxing is changed, where I would say that people now have more of a voice into what goes on to these fights.
I always say that boxing fans don't get the fights that they want. Boxing fans are going to get the fights that they pay for. And so if you keep voting with your pocketbook, we'll be able to see somewhat of a change in that way.
Exactly. Yeah. If you can't, like, for me, I always tell people also, when since we're on the topic of like these fights you got to pay for, like, let's just say like the YouTubers fighting. If people complain about it, which is fine, you're entitled to your own opinion. But I feel like when you're out there complaining openly, that's still advertisement for that fight. Even when you say, "Oh, I want to see this fight to see him get his ass kicked," you're still paying and helping and for this fight, for that fight, to the point where when the numbers come in, they're like, oh, you know, we did great. Yeah. Let's do it again. But if you have an issue with it, just leave it alone. You don't watch it. Don't pay for it. Just let it be. Even like people were upset with the Floyd's his last exhibition. For me, I look at it. For me, we all know Floyd. Floyd's about business first. He's a business mind. He didn't care how the performance looked. He got paid in the end, and he knew people tuned in. People and they sure as hell did tune in. So if everyone is complaining, man, you play a part into that as well.
Yeah, there's definitely a formula in terms of how you make money in this sport these days. One avenue of being able to make money as a professional is to come out of the Olympics, especially as a medal winner. This 2021, which is supposed to be 2020, group of boxers is doing very well. In fact, they are the class that's actually doing getting more medals than your group from 2012, yeah, where they're on par. They're on par.
Even the 2016 group, they've gotten already. Right. I'm happy with that. But you know, the funny part is, I was talking to Alexa, I was talking to JC, and because we were at meetings when it was just all going down. And the crazy part is the crazy thing with the business is, some of the guys who were already signed with promoters, they could basically win gold, but some of these guys look at it as, well, you already signed to cut the contract, you know, you're locked into whatever we offer you. But I look at it like this though, yeah, that is true, and that's just the way the business is. Hey, you can go out there and win as many medals as you want, but you already signed this contract. So, with all the success, that's when your team behind you has to come in and start working more. Because like I said, especially for my guy Duke Reagan, his stock has risen, you know, and a lot of people didn't expect him to do what he did, especially after his first fight in the Olympics. They thought he was, he struggled. Maybe he should have gotten, you know, all the crazy mess that was going on. But every fight he got better, and he fought his way into the gold medal round, and I'm proud of him. So now, you know what I'm saying, it's up to his team to basically go back to the table and basically, you know, say that, okay, my guy was at a four-round fighter, but he's an Olympic medalist. He deserves to be here, maybe, you know, moving on this roadmap to fight for this title or that title, and you know, and the way I look at it, which each fight, that's better, that's best for your resume, the money and everything's going to come. So basically now it's up to the team behind them to basically, you know, get out there and, you know, do the groundwork. Because like I said, you can't put him from winning a silver medal, which is a great accomplishment, and put him back in the four rounders. Like, no, he's now, you know, yeah, his minimums may say this, but in terms of his status as a fighter, he should be up here to where now he deserves to get, you know, more than what he was making before he went to the Olympics. So it's a lot that plays out, but I'm very happy for those guys. And, you know, Keyshawn, he's doing a hell of a job. Richard's doing great. I mean, O'Shea, she's doing well. I mean, the whole team pretty much, even the ones that didn't get it, that didn't medal, they've all been, you know, been doing great. Because I give them a, because remind you, as you pointed out, this was supposed to happen in 2020. You know, these kids, they sacrificed, they waited, and they've been patient, and they still went out there and handled business as best as possible. So I tip my hat off to them, because I don't know if Ibaka did that if we had a pandemic in 2012 where I wanted to sit back a year or so, and you wasn't even sure if the Olympics would even go on, you know, because at one point in time we were thinking like, hey, it might not even happen this year. But you know, I give a lot of credit to them for them sticking together at not only holding it mentally as individuals, but molding as a team.
Well, it's not just if the Olympics was going to happen; they had so many COVID restrictions. You couldn't train the way you want to train. Did you?
Yeah, I mean, I spoke to
you get all about that.
No, it's funny. I spoke to Keyshawn about it, though, because I remember he had posted something on social media where he was upset about all the rules they had to go through before the games even started. And I told him, I said, listen, you worked your way up for this moment from the time you basically laced up a pair of gloves. Just forget all whatever you got to go through in terms of regulations and not having the crowds there. Forget that right now, you know, because this could be a once in a lifetime opportunity. Focus on what's important and go for that gold. And, you know, he came back. He said, you know what? You're right, bro. Thank you. And so far, you know, he's been focused. He's been stopping guys, you know, hurting them, putting them down. And I hope to see him get to that medal round, only just, you know, with a medal, but that gold medal as well. So I'm rooting for him.
What's the first thing he should do when he comes out of the Olympics?
I think, you know, you got to basically – especially if you medal, you gotta learn how to take that new found attention well. Because for some people, it can be mentally stressful. Others, they can get too big. You know, they can get too big headed. So you gotta basically, for me, I say you have to stay grounded and just, you know, be humble and appreciate everything. I'm not saying that don't go out there and, you know, celebrate and enjoy, because you earned it. But at the same time, you got to be realistic. Even like I said, for instance, my girl, Clarissa Shields, when she came out of the 2012 Olympics with myself, I remember her saying that she thought she's going to come home to just, you know, the big parades and the big contracts. And that wasn't the situation. That wasn't the case. And which is sad, but that wasn't the case for her. And which forced it, but made her wait another 4 years to get another goal to prove her point that she was, you know, she was the real deal. And it paid off well for her end. But like I said, even like with her winning the gold medal in 2012, it was sad how like she didn't get the exposure as you may see with other Olympians, mm-hmm. or just in other sports, she was getting, you know, a lot, you know, the commercials and the brands and the sponsors and things of that nature. So like you got to, so like I said, for the guys coming out of it, I would say just be, you know, level-headed and just, you know, be open-minded to what may and may not come your way.
I think especially true when it comes to the women. You talked a little bit about Caressa. You're also managing Micaiah Krebs. How is O'Shea Jones's path going to be a little bit different than her male counterparts?
I think for her, since, you know, credit to just based off the credit given to these women, right, who are now performing on a pro level at the highest level, it gives women's boxing a bigger spotlight, at least, you know what I mean? And especially with her being in pretty much a weight class, because like I said, none of the issues that we're still dealing with women's boxing, and some of these weight classes, they don't have the richly talented fights that we're looking for, because there's not too many out there. But right. she's at a weight class where there are the big names, like, you know, that she can maybe run into, like the Katie Taylors and the you know, and so on, that she's actually in a good place. But at the same time, she has to come out and get with the right people and be on the same page with the right people, because going into the pros, that's a whole different animal, and that's where the business side comes in. Because like I said, because you see it now, most of it comes down to who you're aligned with, and then the network you're aligned with, and then the promoter, you know. So you have to, you know, get with the right people to align the stars in your favor. And that's why, you know, and that's what I would basically get to say to her. But, you know, like I said, she's on the right track. She got a medal, she got a bronze medal. So that's right there, that puts her right there in the mix of where she can just come in and be on the fast track in women's boxing. But she has to get around the right people that have the same visions and goals as she does, and make sure that they're taking care of her, you know, behind the scenes and at the table when it's time to negotiate.
I got a chance to talk to Bomax during the Inouye fight.
Oh.
and I asked him about you, if you were the type of fighter that you had to tell us just slow down a little bit. And he said, absolutely. He said, Jamel is the type of fighter, I never have to tell him to get in the gym and train, but I do have to have him actually not overtrain and not be overcommitted. Are you working with that a little bit now? Are you able to kind of...
I'm not going to lie to you. I'm still the same way. I'm still the same way, because that's just who I am as a person. And I guess that just comes from the Marine Corps background. It just work for me. But that's why I have him and the rest of my trainers with me to pull me back when I do get like that, because there are times when, even towards the end of camp, I feel like I could do more. And they're like, no, you've done everything we asked you. We got to pull you back in because you're going to burn out. And I'm like, no, I'm good. Like, no. I mean, there's times when they had to basically stop the clock, the bell, and everything, and made me get out the ring, because sometimes I feel like I want to go more sparring. I want to do this, especially when it comes to big fights. And you've been there with me from the Kendall situation to the family situation. And so that camp alone, I was so motivated to prove that I can still compete at the highest level that I was going to the gym every day. That's why I post everything I do on my runs. I was the first one on around the track. Even at my age, I'm the fastest sprinter out there. Like, I want to do everything. I want to do everything that I possibly can do, so I don't leave anything or any doubts, at the end of the day. So I was always out there just trying to basically better myself each and every day. And even when you have a guy like Terrence Crawford on your back all the time, you know, that it gets annoying at times, but you will actually appreciate it and you're grateful for it in the end, because all he wants to do is see you get better as well. But like I said, at the time, my team said, you know, Jamel, no, we got to pull you back in, or we got to slow you down, or we got to bring it down, because you're already here. We don't want you to come down here, but we want you just to stay here and then gradually continue to go up instead of going here and then crashing down at the wrong time. So, you know, that's why I love guys like Bomack, Red, and Esau, Jamie Belt, and them, because we've been around each other so long. Like, they know how I operate. They know my limits. They know when it's time to cut it off. So, I mean, I can't complain. But if you allow me, I'm just gonna continue just to go.
So the wheels fall off. There used to be a cartoon series. I think it's Hanna-Barbera. And they had like this thing called the Laugh Olympics, and all the characters would come together and they do like, they challenge each other in ridiculous kind of tasks. I kind of feel like that's what goes on in camp when Terrence Crawford is around. Like, everything's a competition. Oh, you blow bubble? You got bubble gum? We're going to see who's blowing the biggest bubble.
You know what? It's funny that you mentioned that, because like I said, like, even my father, I know exactly what you're talking about. I used to watch those cartoons growing up. So I know exactly what's coming, but that's exactly how camp is. Like, every time, especially when you get the group of the guys who are up there already, the top contenders and champions, we're always trying to outdo each other in some way or form. If Bud thinks I get him here maybe on the sprints, he'll come back the next day and he'll try to outdo me on the long distance runs on the road work. Or if we're hitting the bags and they hear more impact down here, they'll look for a quick second and then they'll try to turn it up on their end. Or you'll see they'll come to your bag and try to, you know, and to motivate or push you or intimidate you, that try to make you think that you're slowing down. So, yeah, I mean, and that's the great thing. That's the great thing about the camp. Even now, I got. I don't know if you've seen it on Twitter, but my trainer kind of, you know, picked on me because I let the cat out of the bag. And, you know, my good friend Amir Khan, now he's part of the camp. He's in Omaha training. And then, you know, me and Amir are always been close. Amir knows me from the time I went back to his gym in 2012 out in Bolton, England. So me and him, we always go back. So it was just good to see, because at one point in time, we was on opposite end because, you know, he fought Bud. So we had to put the friendship on the side. now we're on the same playing field. But, you know, that just goes to show, in my point, it gives a lot of credit and respect to Bomack, because, you know, he went from just having that one kid out of Omaha where no one really thought boxing really existed. And even then, and you know how boxing goes, well, oh, Terrence Crawford is naturally talented. You know, he can go to any trainer and do whatever. So when I came along over there, I think I was another one, like, basically, I gave him another feather in his cap, because they took me from where I came from and they put me into a world champion. And now if you look at the camp, you start to see a lot of other talent coming to the camp. So I'm just happy for him, because, you know, now he's finally getting his just due as a great trainer. And I'm looking forward to seeing what he does with Amir. He actually called me today and he actually wanted me to come out there with Amir and, you know, keep him company and push him and motivate him as well. So I should be out there shortly myself.
Sorry, I had to give some directions to my son real quick. I don't know why, like, they don't bother me until like the very moment when, like, I tell them not to bother me.
It's the same way here. Luckily for me, my youngest, she's sleeping, but the minute she wakes up, she will find her way over here and on my lap and be looking directly at you in a minute. So I'm enjoying the quiet time.
Food, you know, you watching your show, like, they just came back from swimming, should be tired. Why are you messing with me?
That's how they That's how they are.
It actually brings me to my next question, in that people often look at athletes and they figure all you ever do is what's involved in your sport. You a boxer is boxing 24/7. You and your wife, Jennifer, have a family. You also have children with special needs. How important is having like structure and the right people in the right places to make your life work, not just in the ring?
It is very important. It's very important. Sometimes, like I said, like, and it's true, sometimes people think that, you know, us fighters, we just boxing. And actually, you know, with me loving the sport so much, sometimes I can be that way, but I'm glad I have family to keep me grounded and allow me to focus on what's important. Like, you haven't really, and like, unless you see me doing some commentary work, I haven't been really out and about. I've been spending each and every, you know, minute of the day around the family, especially my daughters who have special needs. So, and not to mention, just a strong family, you know, family grounding, it actually motivates me when I do leave for camps, because then I have more of a sense of why I'm still fighting and who I'm fighting for. It's not so much of, you know, the fame and glory. Yes, you know, I want to leave my legacy printed on in the sport of boxing, but at the same time, you got to remember who you're fighting for at the end of the day, because you, and once after the final bell, you got to look to the people who you go home to. And I just want to make sure that as a father, that I've done everything that I felt that I needed to do for them to place them in a better role than I have. Like I tell my sons also, my sons, they, you know, they admire me, they adore me to death. And, you know, to them, I'm their superhero. But I always tell my sons, at the end of the day, my job is to make sure that you're a better man than me by far. If you're not trying to outdo me, and I always tell them, it doesn't have to be boxing, it doesn't have to be sports. I'm just talking about just an individual in life, then there's a problem there. And I have to continue pushing you because I feel, even for myself, that I can be a better person every day. So, of course, I want you to be, you know, to outdo me and become a better person in your own version, though. So, whatever, and I always tell myself, no matter what you want to do, I'm always going to support it. It doesn't have to be boxing. It doesn't have to be sports. But if you have something in mind, I'm going to be your biggest fan. That's my job. I'm supposed to be your biggest fan. I'm supposed to motivate you. And I tell my sons, and I tell all my kids, I said, you don't have to be successful every time out. But as long as you take it as a learning experience and continue to get up and try it again or change things up in life, you know, I can't ask for more. So, my family does play a huge dynamic in terms of who I am, as you see now.
Are they curious about boxing?
My junior is, which is funny. And I'm like, oh my God, the junior curse. I don't want to put that pressure on him. But I tell, if he wants to do it again, I'm going to be your biggest fan. I'm going to make sure that I put you in the right place, and we're going to do it right. I'm not, but at the same time, I don't want to be that father, because dad became an Olympian or world champion. I want you. You have to do this. It has to be perfect, perfect, perfect. Like, no, because I have hiccups in my road. So, you know, if anything, I want you to find your own way. And at the same time, I want you to enjoy it. If it becomes more of a chore and a job, it's not fun anymore. So, we'll be in the basement. We'll do pads, and you know, I'll show him a few things. But we'll keep it very, you know, fun. We'll keep it in a fun environment. I don't make it to where it's, oh no, you're doing this wrong, because at the same time, he's his own person. He may have the name, but he's his own person at the end of the day.
It's an interesting thought, because when you have second generation fighters after their father or mother has become a champion, they didn't have to struggle like you did. You literally had to get it out the mud. Came up through foster care. Your mom had her own demons. And going into the military, losing friends along the way, dealing with the loss of your daughter. That's a lot of stuff to overcome. Oh, yeah. And you have children who didn't have to really overcome all of that. It's a different reason for them to fight.
And that plays a mindset into the fighter as well. And people don't realize that. It's if you never had the struggle or any hardships in your life, it's like, what are you really fighting for in terms of in the ring? You have to really go out there and find something deep to keep you motivated and keep you wanting more. Like for me, just being the underdog my whole life, like you pointed out, it's not just in the ring. I look at it as I was the underdog most of my life. So my motivation for me to be successful in boxing is to always prove people wrong and to over and to beat the odds. That's why I always say, hey, every day I'm always trying to beat the odds. No matter what, I don't care who you put in front of me, I'm trying to beat the odds, because they think I can't do it, I'm gonna show them differently. So, and then I always think about where I came from and why am I, like, again, why am I fighting even now? Because with my daughters, I have two kids with special needs. So that's my motivation to continue, you know, even on days when I don't feel like doing anything, you know, I think about the struggles, you know, that they go through sometimes. And I'm like, my job as a father is to give them a fair shake in life to where they feel like they have, you know, everything that the normal kid out there would have as well, in terms of not even just in terms of materialistic things. Me and Jen think more in terms of education. We want them to have the best education. We want them to feel like they're handicapped or because of this, they can't do that. Like, no, we want them to have the same education as everyone else out there, even if we have to, even if they have to have a different approach with it. So that's one reason, you know what I mean? But like, if you brought up and you have everything and you want to get into the sport of boxing, it's kind of hard to say, you know, well, I really don't have to do this, but I do it because my dad did it or because I like the sport. That makes it hard. I mean, look at, for instance, one example that I see now is, look at Ricky Hatton's son. Ricky Hatton now, he, you know, that gritty, always in a war, but it's like his son didn't have to do that. So it's like, it's kind of hard for his son to find that niche and, you know, saying to really make him stand out or seem like he's really interested in the boxing game. So, and that's the things I want to avoid with my own kids. Cause like, if you really don't have to do boxing, why do it?
Yeah, try to be great at what it is that your purpose to be great at. You talk about kind of like the struggle and the challenges that you have had in your career. And I look at the Olympics and we see this new crop of athletes talking about their mental wellness. And I said the other day, I'm like, at some point we got to stop calling it mental health and just call it health. When you saw that Simone Biles had withdrawn from the early part of the competition, could part of you empathize with what she was trying to say?
Yeah, and I to be honest with you, I really didn't want to dig too deep into it because I was seeing all the nasty stuff going on, and like you pointed out, some people, it's to the point where athletes, and it's not just her, but like athletes in general, they use it so much that people don't know if they're being serious or they're just, you know, just using it as a crutch. And I'm not saying at all that she was using it as a crutch, because this is a woman now who has broken boundaries and records. So she's been like, it's not like she's trying to get out of conflict. Like this, we've seen her perform at her best, and even in the last Olympic Games and so on. So it's like, for them people to think that, like, basically, like, she was using it as a quitter, that's the stuff I wasn't trying to get into. But we do happen to see a lot of other athletes where they say that they're going through mental issues, and that kind of bothers me when I start reading into where they're coming from, and basically going back to where I came from in terms of, you know, even now I still deal with anxiety, PTSD. I have my days where, you know, I have my highs and my lows, but I've learned over time, you know, because I had to get help also, but I learned over time to basically cope with it. I'm not at all saying, again, that everyone has to be like me or that, you know, because everyone's struggles are different at the end of the day. But sometimes we have to know the difference between, you know, mental health or just, you know, having just, you know, a bad day or just issues.
Have you worked with a sports psychologist at all?
Yeah. I worked with one when I was my time on the Olympic team. I worked with one back then. But you know, afterwards it was kind of basically like me on my own, and that's when things started to creep up on me again, and I had issues where I had to go to the you know, me being a veteran, to the local VA for help because it was so bad. And I was and I'm not ashamed to say, like, even Jen says she'll say it too, like, this is the point where I almost lost my whole family because it was that bad. But, you know, I didn't go out there looking for attention and things of that nature. If anything, I went out there to just get help and better myself. And then when Tyson Fury was going through it, that made me come out publicly and want to help others as well and share my story. So That's how I dealt with it. But I mean, others deal with it. Other people deal with it, you know, in different ways. And I mean, you can keep. I feel like, man, you can keep everything to yourself. But like, I just plead with people just to please at least try to go get help, because you don't want it to spiral out of control if it is, you know, that bad. So I just always encourage others to go get help. And there's nothing wrong getting help. I ask for help.
We are talking with WBO Junior Lightweight Champion Jamel Herring. And Jamel, really appreciate your time. And before I let you go, I want to get back to the fight, which was Stevenson. So you know each other well.
Right.
Bull Mac has worked with the both of you. Obviously, he's working with you for this fight coming up. Why is this fight going to be a challenge for you?
Because just the pedigree of Shakur Stevenson. I take nothing from him. I take nothing from him. I believe at this level, as even as a champion, you gotta the challenges.
Yep. We're gonna wait for him to get that notification out of there. Yep, I think he's going to have to log back in. So we are going to wait. Let me see my headset real quick. There he goes.
There we go.
There you go.
All right. Yeah, I mean, like I was saying, with this fight, as a world champion, I feel like every challenge, you're supposed to look at every challenge as greater than the last. So, I mean, for me, I always say to myself, I don't know if this will be the hardest fight of my career or not until I get in there and I see what's in front of me. But for the most part, I have to go out there and just listen to my team. And so far, my team has not let me down once, but it was Bullmack and the gang. And, you know, they're probably one of the best strategists out there in terms of boxing. So, I'm not stressing. I'm actually motivated, because it's another fight, again, where people have their doubts. I mean, for the most part, I'm surprised that there's actually a good ton of people who are pushing for me and believing that I can get that victory. So I'm very grateful of that. But at the same time, you know, others think because they highlighted Shakur as this type of fighter or that type of fighter that it'll be difficult. But I mean, for me, that's what motivates me most. I mean, I think that's the scary part in terms of if you're on the opposite side looking at me coming at you, because I'm not worried. I've been through worse, even in the ring. I feel like I've been through worse, especially like from like the Shavkat fight and on into where I'm now. I've had my hardships in the ring. So I'm not taking anything from Shakur, but it's like, to me, it's another fight. It's a big fight, you know, and I look at, I actually feel like my motivation for this fight is that I need it. And I need this fight because I still want to fight guys like Oscar Valdez. I still want to be the lineal champion of the division. I still want to be a unified world champion. So I need, if I had to go through Shakur to get to Oscar Valdez, that's my motivation. I'm not looking, I'm by far not looking past Shakur, but I'm going to go out there and, you know, and fight my heart out and train my ass off in the gym, you know, before getting to that ring to make sure that I'm successful and I come out that win, that W. So like even now, like I don't blow up in between camps, so I don't have to wait. That won't be an issue for me. All I gotta do is just go to camp, follow my team's instructions, and we just go from there.
It sounds like it's hard for him to get under your skin. Anything he say amuse you right now?
No. No. I mean, for me, I looked at just a lot in the buildup. If you really, and like when I looked at it, I was looking, you know, I kind of took it as they wanted my belt more than the fight. Because at one point in time, I was supposed to vacate and move up. Then they put the interim title on the line just in case I decided to vacate. And we know how that works. That would elevate them to the full champion. And then we just seen recently the purse situation. So if any man in right mind probably been like, you know what, I don't got to deal with this. I don't need this title anymore or this fight. But so like, I feel like in terms of everything that I've seen in the background and that's been out there in front of you guys' face, I feel like there's something going on that they don't want me at times to take this fight. So that's what motivates me. And I honestly feel in my heart that this fight will be his biggest test if you look at it on paper. I've been tested, you know, and I'm not saying that it makes the fight on me against him easier, but like mentally, I'm not beaten. I'm not flustered. I'm not worried. So what do I got? What do I have to lose? I have nothing to lose. All I gotta do is go out there and just be me. It's not the first time. They can put me as an underdog for that fight as well. I don't care. I was an underdog in the last fight. I was an underdog in the Ito fight. And the Ito and Friendly fight, those are two of my best performances, you know, on a championship level. So, like, why? Like, I feel like when my back is always against the wall, that's when I always, you know, shine the brightest. So, I don't care about what they got to say. For me, just sign the paper and get the date and location, and I'll be there when you're there.
Just got a notification. So the Manny Pacquiao Errol Spence fight was somewhat in jeopardy because of the litigation against Manny and Paragon. So the early motion has been denied by the California judge. It is a preliminary ruling. So they're going to go Friday. I think we'll hear like the final ruling about that. How important is it to have somebody looking over your paperwork?
Oh, definitely. Very, very, and that's why I'm glad when the whole situation with the president came out, I had a strong team behind me to keep me from losing it. Because man, if you're fighting those battles by yourself as the fighter, and you're not, and you know, most of us we're not experts in that battle, and there's a lot of paperwork. There's a lot of paperwork that people don't know or don't see. And I mean, even that, what I had to go through was a prime situation. But it's definitely important just to have someone looking on your paperwork, because sometimes it's not even the opponent that may get one from under you. It's somebody within your circle that can get one over you as well. So you always got to be careful, and that's why you always have to be open minded, and you actually want to know what's going on. Like for me, I always want to know what's going on with this step and that step. Like, no, I need to know. Okay, where we're at now. Okay, where's the negotiation at now? Because I don't want to wake up one morning and it's like we seen him with Canelo, with the IBF. One morning he wakes up and his belt is gone. Like, you know, so it's like you always want to be in the mix, and you always want to make sure that your team is on top of those things. So, like, yeah, it's very important, because, like I said, it'll be a shame if something, you know, they find some loophole and the fight is taken from everyone.
Yeah, and when it comes to boxing, it's not a whole lot that can't be solved with a bunch of money. So
yeah, it's just
get paperwork figured out. And like Marshawn Lynch says, watch y'all's chickens. that is for certain. Well, you are a very busy man. We're going to let you go here. Tell folks where they can find you and when you expect to have the final announcement of this fight being made.
I'll say this in terms of the final announcement. Right now, the word is basically, and I'm pretty sure since you know everything going on with the boxing world right now, also, we're waiting on to see what happens with Teofimo and his situation, as well as Butts, because we all know, yeah, exactly. So once those two get their situation together and their date, then you'll hear about my date. You know, so, but I mean, I have a window from basically the end of October to the second week of November. So it's not too far. It's not a big gap. So that's fine. But that's the best. That's the best that I can tell you. And so once you see the news when Teofimo, if they're going to fight on Triller, or if Bob is going to take that fight and put it back on an ESPN date, and when Terrence gets his date together, that's when you know when my fight will take place. But other than that, anyone can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Jamel Herring. I'm open to everyone's, you know, comments, whether they're with me or not. I've spoken with a lot of Shakur Stevenson followers, but it hasn't gotten ugly. You know, we just made little fair bets. Like one guy, funny story today. He's a Shakur fan, but he inboxes me. He said, "Hey, if you beat Shakur, I'll give you a dog." Like, because he knows I love my dog, so he's like, "I see that you got bulldogs, so you know I breed them, and so if you win, I'll send you a dog." Yeah, this is a true story. So I'm like, so I said, you know what, fair deal. So yeah, that's just going to show you. I speak with everybody. I speak with everyone, and I have like crazy conversations with everyone out there. But like me, and that's nothing. I said I don't let the like the shit talk get to me, even when it's a court situation. Because I'm like, I can talk. You don't have to root for me. But as long as you come at me respectfully, and you know, I can reply to you and respect you and your opinion as well. Because at the end of the day, it's an opinion. If you think that's gonna happen, he can win. That's your opinion. But until we get in the ring, you know. That's all in the air.
Yeah, we gonna find out. Listen, y'all gonna fight anyway.
Yes.
Hopefully, I'm hoping you're gonna get a new dog.
Right. Yeah. Oh yeah. Hopefully now. Yeah. I'm looking forward. That's some more motivation. I get a new dog.
How Jennifer feel about that?
Oh no, I'm not. I didn't tell her yet. I didn't tell her yet. She didn't even want one. She didn't even want one. I brought home two, so I'm not gonna tell her about that. But you know, But for me, I took a screenshot of that message, so just, and I put it in my little favorite. So when I go back to it, I'm like, hey, remember you said this is your words.
Come on,
exactly.
Hey, Jamel, always a pleasure to talk with you. I always say we don't have favorites, but we do.
Thank you.
I wish you nothing but great things to happen, and that's the expectation. And so,
and when I do start camp, we got to do this again in the middle of camp, so I can give you the update on everything as well.
Listen, and I want to see the ping pong or push up contest.
No. That's Terrence. I'm not getting into that because it gets ugly when the ping pong table.
I can only imagine. Hey, you have a great rest of your night. Really appreciate you. Thank you.
You as well. Thank you.
Take care. Man, how lucky are we to have time to have a conversation with Jamel Herring, one of the most decent guys in boxing. And for some reason, like, y'all just be sleeping on him. Like, I don't get it. He is one of the most underestimated champions probably ever, but we gonna see. He's got an interesting test coming up in Shakur Stevenson, and Shakur gonna be ready, and I believe Jamel Herring is gonna be ready as well. Speaking of ready, we gonna see y'all next week. I say we because Jeremy Long is gonna be back in the atmosphere, as well as Ralph Velez. Ralph, I believe, is still driving on his way to his second home in Las Vegas. I hope your tires are doing well there, my friend. I know we had a little bit of issue at the earlier part of the week. Hey, there is another boxing gold medal fight coming up with Keyshawn Davis. Y'all need to take a look at that. I don't know why NBC has been hating on the boxing. Like, it needs to be more prominent. We've been watching these U.S. sprinters, and I'm rooting for y'all, but y'all ain't been doing great. Like, y'all been underwhelming for certain, and we need to see a little bit more boxing on the main platform instead of at 2-3 o'clock in the morning on Peacock. You know what I'm saying? So I am Cassandra Cousineau, your girl, the Sportsnista, and I will see you soon enough. In the meantime, please take care of one another. Do what's right, and do what's right by others, and stay safe, you knuckleheads. Talk soon. Bye.